This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Ranches Primary School, a nurturing community school and nursery committed to holistic education in the heart of Arabian Ranches too.
I'm Helen Farmer. On today's Eye on Education, we were talking about emotional regulation, keeping calm in the face of adversity and indeed tantrums, how we can help ourselves, but also how we can help our children from tiny tots all the way through to troubled teens. Dr. Feelings herself was in the studio. And turning our attention to vocational education, how can we help our children find their career path? From trying it out to not having a clue where to start, we brought in the experts.
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Ranches Primary School, a nurturing community school and nursery committed to holistic education in the heart of Arabian Ranches too.
So delighted to welcome to the studio Dr. Elena Andriotti, UK trained psychologist. I should say crucially, and I'm always really keen to introduce people as parents, a mum of three boys. She's worked in clinic practice for 7 years and now consults into schools. She's taught psychology courses at university level and a few years ago decided to write a book for children, explaining the idea, introducing the concept of the feelings doctor, telling the story of a young boy who goes to see Dr. Feelings. This is now an invaluable tool, content for supporting the community and parents and schools in the region. Welcome, Dr. Elena. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm in need of your advice this afternoon. I feel like an awful lot of people are struggling with very heightened emotions right now, us as grown-ups, as adults. And I think, you know, the global situation has certainly got everyone feeling very heightened and dysregulated. We're in a very busy time of year and our children pick up on this. And I think a lot of people are feeling that everything's very heightened and very, you know, quick to fly off the handle. And I wondered if that's something you're hearing from parents as well.
Absolutely. More than ever, in the school, outside, out and about with friends and family. It's been nonstop. It's the topic of discussion at every table.
I'm really glad you're here to kind of guide us through this topic and, of course, take questions. Can I ask you then, from your kind of your own personal point of view, what inspired you to transition from clinical practice to creating Dr. Feelings? And can you tell us a little bit about the philosophy and the aim of it?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, it all started during the pandemic when I felt like I needed to be able to reach a wider audience of people and to give them tools that are going to enter their homes to help them with some of the main issues, the common colds that we experience as parents. And I was always in the clinic practice looking for those tools. I kept, you know, going and searching for certain books that I needed to use with my patients, with the kids that would come and see me. And every time I would look for those, I always felt like something wasn't right. Like there was some more empirical things that I wanted to add, things from my experience as a mom as well. And that's where I decided to create that concept altogether. And I felt like kids don't necessarily understand what it's like to hear the term psychologist. What is this psychologist? It's heavy.
Or assessments.
Yes, or assessments. And my own children used to say, what do you do? I mean, you're a doctor, but not really. You know, you don't prescribe any medication. We don't go to you when we're feeling physically ill. And that's where I started explaining to them, it is about your mental health. And that word as well, I mean, those two words are quite tough for a child to understand. And there goes the term Dr. Feelings.
So is this also an aim of destigmatizing this idea about
Absolutely.
Going to see a doctor or reaching out to anyone about mental health challenges?
Absolutely. That was the whole point of it.
It starts early. It has to start early. And it can be a cultural thing as well, you know, in terms of, you know, certain sectors. And I would definitely count Brits in this being a bit suspicious of reaching out for mental health, you know, issues. Do you feel like that conversation has changed post-pandemic?
It has, but still it's not very common to see young children know how to express their emotions and their feelings, to say, I'm feeling unwell today or unhappy or frustrated. But it's something that they can be taught as early as, I'm going to say toddlerhood, like 1 year and a half. You can actually have a one-year-old come up to you and say, I'm feeling a little bit sad. Mm-hmm. But a lot of parents don't know that it's something you can actually teach that early on.
Well, it's not just the teaching. It's the something I really struggle with is the trying to listen and validate. Okay, so for example, my 9-year-old said to me the day, I don't want to do swim training anymore because it means I've got to be at school at 6 a.m. three times a week and that's not good for my mental health.
I love it.
I kind of can't argue with it because it's not good for my mental health to be getting up at 5:30 in the morning three times a week either.
I love that she used that. I mean, that's just great.
It felt slightly weaponized. I'm not going to lie. We've got questions coming in for you, Dr. Laney. We're talking about emotional regulation, well-being. I mean, also a bit about resilience as well, I am sure. So if you do have any questions, we'd love to hear from you. Em asking on social media earlier, daughter's turning 10 and is having, she's written this in capitals, big feelings. Is it too early for hormones? It feels like it's a bit early for proper teenage tantrums. We're going to get some strategies in place too.
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Ranches Primary School, a nurturing community school and nursery committed to holistic education in the heart of Arabian Ranches too.
We're talking emotional dysregulation, regulation and well-being now in our children, but also in us, because it does tend to go hand in hand. With the founder and author of Dr. Feelings, Dr. Elena Andriotti. She's going to be speaking at Baby Expo 2024 later this month. More on that very soon. But I wanted to ask you, with your clinical practice and also as a mum of three, would you mind explaining a little bit, maybe some common misconceptions that parents have about children's emotional development? You know, how can we better understand our kids?
And quite often, one sentence that I often hear is, what is wrong with my child? Why is my child reacting in that particular way? And why isn't my child able to regulate his or her emotions? And I often say there is absolutely nothing wrong with your child. The issue that needs to happen is to give them the necessary tools, just like you, Helen. Let's say you need to cope with some distress that you've experienced today. And if you were to cope with it in one particular way, it doesn't mean that this size would fit anyone else. So I may need something completely different. And I think that this is at the root cause of everything. Parents need to understand that their children come with different baggages from their genetic predispositions to their psyche, their emotions, their thoughts, and also the social environment that impacts their behavior. And if we start looking at it from these three dimensions, we're better able to know what it is we can control and that we can have an impact on as parents using parenting tools and strategies.
I feel like there's never been as much information, more perspectives, more philosophies, more parenting styles. It's really, really overwhelming. But I think this idea of gentle parenting is the one that's definitely getting the most headlines and the most, you know, views on social. My worry is, and I'm keen to get your take on this, has so-called gentle parenting gone too far? Do I need to validate every single emotion that my child is having every single second of the day? Because it's not enough time.
Is it even possible for you to do so?
But then I feel like a bad parent. I'm like, oh, I'm not naming your feelings when you don't want to put your shoes on.
I don't do it. To be honest, I think that sometimes it's about taking some of those strategies that I need to take and tailor make them to each of my children's personalities and what their needs are. But I think that sometimes if we overdo anything, it can be a little bit overwhelming for the child as well. And honestly, I mean, I've had my child tell me sometimes, I don't need you to validate my feelings right now, you know?
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch. I've got questions coming in for Doctor this afternoon. Do reach out. This came out on social earlier saying, our daughter is turning 10 soon and is having some big feelings, in capital letters. Is it too early for hormones? Because this feels like proper teenage tantrums.
Pre-onset puberty is a thing, to be honest. I mean, nowadays we've been noticing a lot of children experiencing such big emotions, and very common in girls, young girls, before puberty. So there is something with the air we breathe, I think, and there's a lot of research.
The chicken we're eating.
Absolutely, about that. But I would say, regardless of whether or not it is hormones, only a doctor would be able to confirm what is going on physiologically.
Does it really matter?
Doesn't, because at the end of the day, those big emotions need to be addressed. So I would say that's the focus you should go on. There are big emotions. What are they? And how can you help her cope?
What if those big emotions, and you kind of go, really? Like, this is why you're sobbing? And you maybe don't say this to your child, although sometimes maybe you do. It can be very hard to try and get on the level and understand the depth of outrage or distress or sadness when it feels to you like quite a small thing.
Right, but it's also related to their age and cognitive abilities, their cognition, their thought processes. I mean, all of this has a very big impact. I mean, for a 2 or 3 year old, something as easy as a piece of food falling on the ground can be
the end of the world.
It is the end of the world. I mean, my 3 year old always thinks that if one piece of anything falls on the ground, it's like the end of the world because he wanted to eat it.
So what do you do in those situations? to calm him.
I just say, I understand you're frustrated because your food fell, but here's what we can do. I offer solutions. And honestly, I let him be when he does that, because he's going to engage and he may scream, he may get angry, and sometimes it goes out of proportion. But when he sees that ultimately I'm ready to give him the solutions and offer help, he calms down on his own.
This is what I want to talk about next. Joining us in studio this afternoon ahead of Baby Expo 2024, we've got Dr. Elena Andriotti. About how do we stay calm in the face of the supermarket tantrum, of the sibling whacking that is a frequent occurrence in our house? We've also had messages coming in on the text line saying, any advice on self-regulating while dealing with two boys with ADHD who seem to thrive on dysregulating each other and me?
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Ranches Primary School, a nurturing community school and nursery committed to holistic education in the heart of Arabian Ranches too.
2 years ago, Dr. Elena Andriotti decided to write a book for children telling the story of a young boy who visits a psychologist, i.e. the feelings doctor. From this book, the concept of Dr. Feelings was born. She's now created various tools and content to support the community of parents in the region with dealing with, yes, their own emotions, but also child psychology too. She's going to be speaking at the Baby Expo 2024 later on this month. What are you going to be talking about? You know, it's an opportunity to speak to lots of people at the same time. What's the big issue you're looking to address and help as many people as possible?
Well, there's going to be quite a few very interesting talks, but I think one of my favorite ones is the panel that's going to touch upon postpartum depression and how to cope with becoming a mom for the first time. So I'm very excited about this one. And I think that the most exciting part of being part of Baby Expo is to simply be with the community and be kind of a face people can come at and ask questions and just feel like they have the support of the community, which I think is amazing for us to get together.
And also interesting for you to get a bit of a read on what is concerning parents. What are the hot topics right now and be able to kind of address presumably future content and tools around that.
Absolutely.
Big topic of today, emotional regulation in ourselves as adults and in our children as well. We've got lots of questions. We're going to try and get through as many as possible. Anonymous messages come in, and you can be anonymous, makes no difference at all, saying, any advice on how to self-regulate while dealing with two boys with ADHD who seem to thrive on dysregulating each other and me?
I think that the first advice I can give you is to try as much as you can to understand what it's like to have ADHD, because there are a lot of misconceptions when it comes to this diagnosis. And nowadays, I think that the best thing we can do as parents of children with ADHD is to educate on ourselves, to try and understand why they are behaving so impulsively. Is there any hyperactivity, yes or no? What is causing it? What is triggering it? At the end of the day, there is no perfect way to parent, and it's a big challenge to parent children that have particular needs and that are unable to regulate certain impulses. So, you know, I just want to say I empathize with everything that this mom is going through. And I just also want to say that it's okay to sometimes feel like you can't handle certain behaviors, because it's normal for you to feel overwhelmed at times. And the best thing you can do, as I said, is to understand why they're behaving in that particular way and take some time for self-care for yourself. It'll help.
It's really, really hard, I find, when my kids are winding each other up. And actually, Chris has sent a message in a similar vein to try and stay calm. And I understand, and this is something me and my husband fall out about a lot, because we can both, you know, fly off the handle. Be like, shut up, you know, just, you know. Not my finest parenting ever, but it happens. And I remember speaking to Dr. Chris Willard, who was a psychologist we had on the show recently and at the Unparenting Conference last year. And we talk a lot about this idea of, you know, put on your own oxygen mask before putting on others. And he was like, I actually find it more useful to think about you are the pilot of that plane. And the last thing you want during a moment of crisis or escalation is for that pilot to be like, everybody panic, you know, and completely lose it. But it can be very, very challenging for you to stay calm, be responsive instead of reactive, you know, be that port in the storm. I think your point there about self-compassion and self-care and, you know, kind of building yourself up constantly so you feel more capable and able to respond is really crucial.
Absolutely, because we tend to forget about our own well-being.
Frequently. Chris's question. Chris, I think Chris was listening before the news, because this is kind of ties into what we were talking earlier, saying, what should you do if you think your child is massively overreacting to something? E.g., Chris, you're not alone in this. One sibling looks at them funny and they lose it. Our sons fight, they're ages 8 and 10, and it escalates really quickly. It takes a lot not to say, you're both being ridiculous. So, overreaction.
I completely understand. I mean, first of all, it's something we touched upon earlier. It's important to, you know, focus on the child's cognitive needs at this point, because they know that they have a particular way of thinking that is difficult to change, you know. For them, looking at them funny is an insult. Right?
Oh, we've had whole car journeys where I'm like, you look out of that window, you look out of that window, enough.
Right. Did you once try and say, okay, she's looking at you funny or he's looking at you funny, but can you tell your brother or sister how that makes you feel? I mean, why is this such a big deal? Because more often than not, you'll notice that they don't even know. It's just they're trying to, you know, find the littlest details
totally.
To be at each other's throats. And to be honest, that's part of childhood development. That's the fun part of having a sibling. If you don't fight with your siblings, I mean, what else is there to do? You're with them constantly. It's like when you bicker with your partner, you know? I mean, you're with this person 24/7. Sometimes it's okay to feel the need to say, did you look at me with, like,
Did you what tone was that?
Exactly. So this is all normal. And I would say, you know, you can have your children express how they feel in those particular moments so that they can communicate better. But at the same time, I think that it's okay. Let them be sometimes. Let them bicker and try to step away. If you feel like for a repetitive amount of time, it's been blowing out of proportion, then you need to be able to create some strategies as a parent to try and get them to collaborate a little bit more. And strategies would include solving something really difficult together, because misery loves company. If you give me a very difficult task, it would be easier for me to resolve it with a partner. Mm-hmm. So it could be, a scavenger hunt or like a very difficult puzzle or something that they need to resolve as a team. It could be a very, very efficient strategy.
I heard something similar, which was if your kids are falling out, put them on the same team against you as a parent. You
know, absolutely.
Playing a board game.
Exactly.
You two against mummy. Okay. It's a couple of questions I wanted to ask from a personal point of view. One is, what should you do when the fighting gets physical? So I'm thinking about Chris's example here. You know, she looked at me funny and then all of a sudden, like, you know, a fist comes out and it's a whack on the leg and the next one comes, you know, and suddenly you're like, oh my God, you're like really whacking each other. I never really know what to do in this situation. Should I be pulling them apart? Should I let them scrap and let them tie themselves out? What do you do?
I mean, when it comes to physical fights, I think that it's too difficult to ask a parent to let them, you know, because you're actually seeing it in front of you and your instinct as a mother is going to be to be like, what is going on? So when my boys, the twins particularly,
are seven,
always at each other's throats physically. And sometimes I just come in, I will pull them aside and I say, you know, I have this board on our wall that has the values of our home that I drew. It's not even something that, you know, it's a resource that we created together as a family. And I say, I understand it's fun, and I know you guys want to do that from time to time, or you're at each other's throats for X, Y, Z reason. But these are the values of this home. You don't see me going around, you know, at someone else's throat doing the same thing. And I always remind them that there are certain zones that are no zones. Like, this is a zone you do not touch regardless. And you know what? Why not let them? You want to fight it out? Sure. But in this way, you know what? I'll give you guys pillows. Do it in a safe way. You want to wear gloves? Wear gloves. You know what? Have the pillow in between, but if you need to let it out at each other, so be it, as long as you do it under my terms, mm-hmm. my conditions.
What's on your kind of family value, and can we get a copy of it?
Maybe someday. Things like what we do together when we struggle with different things. So we have two different categories, what we try to avoid as much as possible. And then we have the other side that has how we should resolve most of the things. So things would include like, if I struggle with something, how do I cope with that issue that I have? And I do little blurbs about like how to talk about these things, who to talk to when you have that struggle. So little things like that, that I think are cute.
Dr. Lennon with us today, Dr. Feelings. I'm going to talk a little bit more about Dr. Feelings. And my second question is, should you force your kids to say sorry after they've had a fight?
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Ranches Primary School, a nurturing community school and nursery committed to holistic education in the heart of Arabian Ranches too.
In studio today, we've got mum of three and UK-trained psychologist, Dr. Elena Andriotti. She is the founder, the creator of Dr. Feelings. I've got a very quick question, which is a one from me, which was, after our kids have been having a big fight, or even if one does something to slight the other, you know, stealing, not sharing, whatever that might be, should we force them, encourage them to say sorry to each other, or should that be on them?
What's the point of forcing them to say sorry?
If
they don't mean it. I think that the most important thing here is for them to learn what was the consequence of what happened, of their actions, and how that could have impacted the other person. Mm. I think this is the most important part. They need to be able to mean it and to understand that it's a social responsibility to apologize when you have wronged another person. But I think more importantly, they need to understand what comes after the apology. Like, if you've hurt that person, what can you do to make it better?
Can we talk about Dr. Feelings? We've only got a couple of minutes left, but you started it, as you said, after lockdown and putting some tools in parents' toolkits at a very, very challenging time. But, you know, these are evergreen problems. And there's posters in English and Arabic and French. There's Colour My Feelings. There's a puzzle. Tell us about the My Worry Not box.
This is my favourite product, to be honest, because it has so much in it and it took so long to actually write it. It contains 30 different techniques that can help you as a parent, help your child develop the appropriate coping mechanisms to deal with anxiety, distress, but also anger. Okay, and these techniques, they're drawn in a nice way. And on the back end of these cards, there's an explanation for parents that will guide them to teach their kids those techniques.
Such as, I'm just having a quick look, by the way, star-shaped breathing.
Absolutely, that's one of them. Those are techniques, Helen, that I used to use in the clinic practice. And I would often tell parents, practice them with your kids at home. Use them with them, because it's not enough to come to therapy once per week. You need to practice these certain tools on a regular basis so that it becomes an automatic thing that you do when you cope.
Progressive muscle relaxation, tummy breathing. And I think we all need more in the toolkit. Lastly, you are going to be there at Baby Expo at the end of this month,
25th.
The reason I don't know is because I'm not going to be there. I'm going to be in Scotland, unfortunately. But it sounds like such a brilliant event and some amazing names from here in the region and beyond coming together. You touched on a couple of the panels you're going to be speaking about. For people who want to find out more about Baby Expo and, of course, you, Dr. Lena, what's the best way of getting in touch?
I think they can get in touch on social media. They can go on the Baby Expo and they'll find a lot of really nice things, topics, speakers, and a way to purchase their tickets as well.
And for you, Dr. Feelings.
Dr. Feelings or Dr. Elena.
Thank you so, so much.
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Ranches Primary School, a nurturing community school and nursery committed to holistic education in the heart of Arabian Ranches too.
Wonderful to have you with us as explore the topic of vocational education now and after 1:30, looking at the role of a school counsellor in helping children, teens, young people find their path. Joining us now from Repton, Dubai, we have got the head teacher, Lewis Rattray. Lewis, or Mr. Rattray, sorry, I need to remember my manners. How are you today?
I'm very good, Helen. How are you?
Thanks for having me back on. So come on then. What did you want to be when you were growing up?
So I wanted to be an archaeologist where I saw my life going and traveling around the world, having adventures, a little bit like Indiana Jones. That's where I saw myself going. So I ended up as a history teacher, which I guess in some ways is, not a million miles away from being an archaeologist. And I certainly get to have the adventures and travel the world. So,
tick, tick. I love it. So what advice were you given then as a teenager growing up about how to put what you were learning in school into practice in the workplace to, you know, hopefully transfer skills to salary? Or did you feel like you were kind of left on your own to try and figure it out?
Well, I think we were very lucky. When I was at school, we had a guidance teacher for each of the year groups who was able to give us advice on our university and careers pathways. For a pathway like archaeology, for example, that I was told to sort of focus on more humanities subjects, but I also took science as well, so history, English and biology. I was lucky enough in Scotland, you're allowed to take 5 or 6 subjects at that sort of final level, so I was also able to indulge my love of music and drama as well on the side. I felt on the whole pretty well advised when I went to school.
I didn't. Crikey. I think we did one questionnaire in the library, which was that kind of, these are the jobs available to you. And it was like, you can be a silversmith or a probation officer. And then we all just went and had to try and figure it out from there. There also wasn't much hands-on understanding of what the workplace could look like. And that's what I want to talk to you today. What is vocational education, Lewis? And how is it integrated into your curriculum in particular?
Sure. So vocational education really is a pathway that focuses on providing practical skills and knowledge related to specific, could be trades, occupations or professions. So for example, through our BTEC qualification here at REPS in Dubai, we offer BTECs currently in business and sport, and we're expanding that next year into performing arts, applied science and information technology. So they're really designed to prepare individuals for the workforce, equipping them with skills to excel in their chosen career paths, and offer hands-on training where possible, work experience opportunities as well, to ensure that students are well prepared for the demands of the job market upon graduation.
So how do you think it does actually empower them, that vocational education as a point of difference? Have you seen even examples of students who've maybe had that moment of, click, I get it now?
Yeah, so I think there's an element of it is practical skills. So, for example, on the business course, things like running a budget, managing a team, the performing arts course that we're going to be offering next term is really, really exciting. So things like producing a radio programme, for example, might be something
that they
can do.
Send them my way, Mr. Rattray. I've given them a rude awakening.
To have. So, you know, I think in that way, that, you know, that really empowers them. I think confidence, independence, you know, in real world settings, as well as the internships and industry experience there. I think it's important as well, you know, in the world that we live in, we rep to Dubai is very much an inclusive school, and these pathways are inclusive, they're diversified, and they allow for different learning styles and interests. You know, in terms of specific examples, can think of one current year 12 student who was not particularly well engaged at around the time of GCSEs, and got on the BTEC programme in year 12. And she's now predicted to get 3 D stars, which is actually the equivalent of 3 A levels. Wow. At grade A. Attendance up to 97%. And she's been offered a paid internship in the summer with a leading company, a leading jewellery company, actually in the UAE, and working with them on weekends. So, you know, that in terms of light bulb moment, that's the sort of thing that, you know, these types of courses can really, really empower individuals and really provide for them a pathway to success that they might not have had.
I want to unpack it a little bit more in terms of how it works, because you're talking there about kind of results and equivalencies. And I think for a lot of parents, it's a bit of the unknown. So if you don't mind, Mr. Rattray, that's what we're going to be talking about next. We've had a message here from Abigail saying, can you please ask your expert and discuss a bit the difference between A-levels and BTEC uni options for each path? Year 11 students have IGCSE boards starting today until June. So I think we're going to be demystifying a little bit about those terms and ultimately where those options can take you.
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Ranches Primary School, a nurturing community school and nursery committed to holistic education in the heart of Arabian Ranches too.
Our very own Indiana Jones is on the line. Lewis Rattray, the head teacher at Repton Dubai. We had a really interesting message from Abigail, which I think speaks to a lot of the, I wouldn't say concerns, I don't mean concerns, queries, curiosities that parents have. Saying, can you please ask the expert and discuss a bit the differences between A-levels and BTEC and uni courses for each path? Year 11 students have IGCSE boards starting today. So to my mind, you know, I did GCSEs at school, then I did A-levels. And the thought of kind of straying too far from that, I start to feel a little bit, what does that mean for, I don't know, the points needed for university or what options could be closed off to them? Would you mind demystifying some of the options for us today?
Sure. So the BTEC National Award is a level 3 award. So that is the equivalent of an A-level course. It's scored differently. So they're scored on the score of distinction or merit. So a distinction star, for example, is the equivalent of an A star at A level in terms of those UCAS points. It's the same weighting for each of those BTEC National Level 3 qualifications. In terms of the destinations to go to with those qualifications, I think a big shout out to our BTEC coordinator, Michelle Pomfret, and our careers advisor, Tracy Fleming, who've done a lot of work on this and looking at BTEC options going forward and the pathways that students can get onto. And we find that there's actually, particularly in the UK context, there's very, very few universities that won't accept BTECs as an equivalent for A-level for most courses. Now, you might expect for some of the more specific courses, things like medicine and law, then they would prefer perhaps the more traditional academic paths and academic qualifications. But just about all universities in the UK will recognise the BTEC qualifications as a level 3 qualification with the same weighting for UCAS points as an A-level.
I find that really encouraging, to be honest, that so you would expect that, you know, maybe your kind of your Russell Groups and your Redbrick universities might have a degree of snobbishness about it, and the fact that that's not the case is wonderful. I would also say that it's a bit of a, I don't know if this is a controversial thing to say, not all kids can and should go to university. I mean, you're talking about there about, you know, training in a trade or trading in an industry and being ready to start work, you know, straight away out of school. There's a lot to be said for that. And certainly something I'd be really keen to explore with my kids when they get to that age. But that's a mindset shift for a lot of parents. It's like, this is the prescribed route. And if we dare to veer from that, then, you know, what could lie ahead? Not really taking into consideration the strengths of that child and the interests of that child. You mentioned before some of the courses that you're currently doing at Repton and the courses that you're looking to introduce from next term. And what kind of trends are you starting to see that could, I don't know, are we seeing more of this in the UAE? And what would you advise other educators when it comes to implementing or enhancing their vocational education offerings?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's becoming far more popular as an alternative pathway, absolutely. I think in terms of implementation, I think exactly as you allude to, I think one of the biggest challenges, if you like, is this idea of societal perception that prioritises the more traditional academic paths towards university. And that can lead to a little bit perhaps of a stigma from both students and parents, when actually, you know, it's absolutely not the case. And these are fantastic opportunities to really provide a, you know, diverse career pathway to individual students, and really allow them a individualized learning pathway onto their next stage. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, funding and resources from a sort of implementation point of view as well, sometimes they require specialized equipment, qualified instructors, but again, you know, these can be overcome. I think we found that you know, engagement with local industries, engagement with local businesses can be really important in helping us set up these programs and making them really, really successful for our students that are involved.
Last question, message here from Andy saying, would you mind repeating which BTEC are currently on offer? So what's currently there, and what are you going to be introducing from August, September next term?
Sure. So currently we offer BTEC Business and BTEC Sport, and we're expanding that out into Information Technology, Performing Arts and Applied Science. So much like an A-level, students would choose three BTECs, or indeed what's really exciting is that they can also do a hybrid combination of BTECs and A-levels. So for example, it might be that the student is particularly interested in music and drama as their A-levels, let's say, and they want to do a performing arts BTEC, or indeed they are particularly interested in information technology, but they want to combine that with, as you know, as a practical element, but they want to combine that with something
like a little more academically. Yeah, interesting.
Maths or physics or these types of things. So the pathway is flexible there. And as I say, the UCAS points at the end of the day when it comes to university offers is the same.
Really interesting. And I genuinely mean this, really opened my mind about opportunities available here in the UAE and some of the conversations we can and should be having around them. Lewis Rattray, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time as ever.
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Ranches Primary School, a nurturing community school and nursery committed to holistic education in the heart of Arabian Ranches too.
Now, if my northern accent increases by about 30%, we've got our next guest to thank for that. Donna Young is with us, the school counsellor at Horizon International School. How are you, Donna?
Oh, I'm absolutely marvellous. Thank you, Helen.
I'm really pleased you're here. I wish you'd been at my school when I was a teenager. I really, really do, because I feel like for someone to be there to answer questions, to be a bit of a... I was thinking about a bit of a sat-nav. That was the phrase that came to mind there.
Absolutely, yes.
Would you mind explaining what your job entails as a school counsellor? Because different schools do it in different ways, but what
they
is it for you?
They do. It's one of those things where different schools have different needs, you know, and it's the same, you know, the world over. Very much my role is to sit alongside young people, just chat to them. I think that's the first thing that we do, and build that relationship, get to know them, you know, what their dreams are, what they're good at, what they enjoy. Because we know this, there's lots of evidence to say that the children that go on to do anything, and especially at university, their choices are based on what they enjoy, not just their employability. Mm-hmm. But it's also about providing opportunities and activities that that helps them discover themselves and what their skills are. Because we're all the same, you know, what we know and what we can do can be two different things. Mm-hmm. And we need to have the right information, but also to be able to do certain things to think, oh, I actually do like that.
Or I don't.
Absolutely.
I think sometimes you can find yourself being stuck in a rut or stuck in someone else's expectation of what you should
Absolutely.
Be doing. And actually when it comes to trying it, you know, this makes me miserable.
Yes.
What trends are you noticing from some of the students? Are you getting lots of, I want to be a YouTuber?
Well, actually, that's the surprising thing. No, we don't get lots of that.
Phew.
You know, and it is very different. Coming from the UK, there are lots of patterns and trends, you know, that parallel the workplace and university. In Dubai, it's very much business is one of the most popular choices, in not just in schools, but universities here as well. Technology, anything to do with technology. We do get a lot of students that like media students, mm-hmm. Is very popular. Law. Finance, those sorts of areas.
It's interesting about the business thing, because I think of Dubai being a very entrepreneurial city.
Yes.
And a lot of that can be with, you know, families that have, you know, grown up here or settled here and, you know, have their own businesses.
Yes.
And I love this idea of a kind of children being brought up in an entrepreneurial idea
Absolutely.
In a home and thinking, oh, actually, if there's not a job that exists that I want, then I'll just create one.
Absolutely. And we do find that students that that go on to do A levels and then after that, you know, whether the university is not for them, that is something that they've always got a plan B, C, D and so on. Mm-hmm. And that is something that is a big difference. You know, I mean, it's a very long time since I made my choices. I mean, I'm a 60s child, so it is wonderful to see. And that young people are constantly evolving in exploring and they're curious.
Good.
So it's not, they may say, oh, I want to go into the legal profession. It's not like what you see on the TV, what they want. They want to go on and work for the UN. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something that's traditionally what I would think about legal studies.
Interesting.
It's something that's quite relevant and, you know, today reflects today's society.
And I think you're right. You know, you know, even yourself, you know, talking about changing careers in your 50s.
Yeah.
You know, I think that is the case now. People are
Absolutely.
A lot more, you know, fluid and flexible and changing. And there's a real danger of getting very stuck on an idea very,
Absolutely.
Very young. I'm probably quite a good example of that. I was 14, I think, when I decided I was going to do. I was going to do broadcast journalism at Leeds University. It was a BBC degree and I got all of my like part-time jobs to get around that, and it was really competitive. There were only 30 spaces and I got on it and I didn't really like it. And I graduated and I had what I can only look back on as a bit of a quarter-life crisis of going, oh my God, what do I want to do? And what else is there? How can you... this is a difficult question.
Oh, I like the difficult ones.
If you have a student that comes to you who is blinkered and dead set on something that you are like, oh, I'm not 100% sure that that's the best path for you, how do you help them explore that?
I think the first thing, you have to respect that, because that is a normal... it's very normal. It's more common than you think as well. And it is the key is to empower students, whether it's the students or their parents.
That's what I'm getting
Absolutely.
At.
Absolutely.
What if that idea has been put in place from parental expectation?
Absolutely.
And they come to you and say, you know, Donna, they want me to be a lawyer, but, you know, I want to be a tree surgeon.
Yeah. And the influences on any child or any student's pathway are massive. And one of them are preconceived ideas. And in particular, parents, they are a very important part of the process. Quite often it could be, well, we didn't go to university, so you are definitely going in. Thank you very much. And it is about making sure that we get access, both, sort of children and parents, access to good information and to acknowledge and respect that knowledge change and behaviour change takes time. So spending time with them, giving them access. We use something in school called Unifrog.
Unifrog.
Unifrog. Now, it's it started as a university platform, and it has mushroomed and takes into account the international audience now. And there are some excellent resources on there and for all age groups. And the information.
I'm just thinking. So yeah. If someone who is listening now and they're like early 40s and they go, I'm really not enjoying my career. Could you go on Unifrog and start asking some questions?
It's something that we buy in as schools.
So it's like a proper education resource.
It is. But there are other platforms out there. I would say, UCAS, it's the UK's university platform. That is free, open to everybody. Again, it's evolved. It's huge. It's wonderful. Get an account, any 40-year-old out there that's got something to think about, use it. And there's something else called Prospects. There's some incredible high-quality information out there. And I think that's the key to all of these things. But also back to what sort of, just to link in with what you were saying before, that it's riding those changes and accepting, actually, it's about wiggly careers now. Wiggly careers.
A wiggly line. I interviewed someone who has dedicated her life to talking about the wiggly line career.
Absolutely.
Can you explain a little bit about it?
It is not my term. I love it because it's very northern, because it's, it's a little bit, onomatopoeic and a bit silly, and I love that. Somebody else came up with the term, and we've got this idea, there are lots of academics that use this, that the change that run parallel to political, societal, industry-led changes that will influence, because that's what education is. It's a reflection. We are preparing children for the real world. So it will change. But and also, it doesn't end when we leave school.
Well, no, it doesn't. And that's what I find really interesting, to think that we put such... Like, kids making really big
absolutely.
Decisions. I'm like, you're 13 and you're thinking about, okay, if I do these GCSEs, then that's going to lead to this A-level, and then that's going to lead to this university, and then that's going to lead to this career. And I'm like, you're just a kid.
Yeah. And I think that's why, the opportunities that we provide in school, that there's got to be an element of fun, and we bring guest speakers in and we take them on visits and trips and very much. And there's a TED Talk on this idea of, I think they call it squiggly careers, and it's about the wiggliness of it all. And it's great. And it's about sharing that narrative that's different. I was destined to be a secretary. And then when I got married, I was at home having children. That was my career's advice. And I didn't listen then. And I didn't, I still don't listen. So there you go.
I love you for it. Now, we've had a question, which I'm glad we have. This came in from Naomi earlier. Saying re-careers, daughter has no idea what she wants to do. She says she regrets her A-level choices, wish she'd done better in her science GCSEs. She's refusing to consider universities or visit them and hasn't started a personal statement. I've tried everything I can think of, but it ends in an argument. I'm at a bit of a loss. I've suggested a gap year or applying for a general type degree to keep the options open. She just says she hates studying, but she also says she wants to go to university. And then Naomi has written, in capital letters.
Absolutely. Well, just to share, I went through something similar with my son, and he's 32 now. And I think that, the dynamic between, we want the best for our children. And I also believe in life stage decisions, that my son similarly just got fed up of being told what to do and studying. And it could be that. So feeling bad about herself and, this has not worked for me. But actually, all of those things have helped her to understand this one is not for me, but there will be something else. So reassurance is massive. Mm-hmm. Something will turn up, absolutely. But it is about that key information. And at the moment, if she's refusing to do things, just acknowledge that. I think acknowledge, accept. Okay, let's just take some time out. And my son went and he went to be a dishwasher for a little bit because it was his decision. Probably just to cheese me off a little bit as well. Okay, all right. And then 4 years later, he went to university on his terms and came out with a first class degree and went out then on to do his master's. And I think that's the key. It's sometimes very, very difficult as a parent to go, okay, you will find your way, maybe not just yet. So some reassurance that something will turn up. It's maybe just the time and at the minute. She needs maybe just to take a breath.
And that it's hard as a parent. I'm learning that, you know, you think you've cracked it and then they get a bit older and they change. And, you know, a bit of advice I heard recently was about the, when they get into that teenage, that you're not a manager anymore. You're not the one who's like managing everything. You're a coach.
Absolutely.
But I would imagine, Naomi, some of these conversations, the probably the more you ask, the more resistant, the more walls going up.
Absolutely.
And maybe that's where someone like a school counsellor or someone external could maybe help her explore things without feeling like she's being nagged at. Not that I'm saying you're nagging, Naomi, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
This is Eye on Education on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Ranches Primary School, a nurturing community school and nursery committed to holistic education in the heart of Arabian Ranches too.
In conversation today with Donna Young, school counsellor at Horizon International School. We've only just got a minute left, Donna, but I wanted to ask you, what do you feel like we haven't touched on, or what do you feel like is really important to address for parents in particular listening today who might be trying to have conversations with their teens to guide them and ultimately make them the happy, successful, kind, wonderful humans that we know they can be?
It's just to touch on, really, the previous guest touched on this as well, the awareness and our understanding and our preconceived ideas about vocational education and what that means. And it's not so clear cut. It might be, oh, okay, I know what vocational is. You know, I want to be a hairdresser or I want to, you know, work in a bar. It's not that clear cut because BTECs actually are very academic as well. You need to know a lot, you know, applied qualifications. I know that, you know, any applied science, it mirrors very much the same as A levels. They still have to sit exams, they still need to know stuff, you know, and it's I think we should explore and be open to ourselves and our own preconceived ideas that actually they are not easier. They may be an alternative and different. There may be more practical work experience elements to it, in particular like sports science. But also, I think that the misunderstanding that, or the, this will, you know, the stigma attached means they won't get into university. And I love the fact that that was brought up in the previous conversation.
Yeah, good.
Apart from medicine, you know, they are very well respected across the world. And that is so important.
So last question to you, Donna. What did you want to be when you were a kid?
I wanted to be an anthropologist and go and disappear up a jungle and, yeah.
It's never too late if anyone can do it. I'd put my last dirham on you. Thank you so much
Thank
for your
Helen.
Time.
Thank you, Helen. It's a joy.
It's been an absolute pleasure. That was Eye on Education. I'm Helen Farmer and you can catch us live on Dubai Eye 103.8 every single Thursday afternoon.